Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, October 23rd, 2011, and this is show number 335. Well, we're going to start the show with a segment we've never started the show with before.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
How do I?
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Okay, I didn't say it was a segment we've never done before. I just said it was a segment we've never started the show with before. Well, for anybody who hasn't been here before, Dumb Question Corner originated because of a professor I had in college. This calculus prof said that he asked if there were any questions, and I raised my hand and I voiced a question to him. He stopped the class and made them applaud me for having the courage to ask a question. Now, of course, I was mortified at the time, but what he said really stuck with me. He said that you may think your question is dumb at the time, but he guaranteed that at least one other person in the room had that same question. So for the NoSillaCast, dumb questions are those you think might be too dumb to ask, but you've just never figured out for yourself. You don't realize, but somebody else out there definitely has that same question. You may doubt the power of this tool, but this week we did get our proof. A couple of weeks back, Jim Sewell, also known as Deveril on Twitter, asked how to do a save as and actually navigate to a specific folder. I pointed to the tiny disclosure triangle that showed the rest of the drive with all locations available to him. This was a perfect dumb question, because once you see it, you understand easily how it works, but until somebody points at it, it was not all that obvious. Well, this week, Maury Johnson wrote in and said that he, too, had always been frustrated by the inability to save as to any location of his choosing, and Jim's question got him the very answer he needed. Isn't that awesome? Well, one more thing about dumb questions in general. I've decided to add a disclaimer to it. People keep asking me to answer iTunes, iPod, iPhone questions. Here's what you need to understand. I will never, ever, ever be able to answer your questions about iTunes. Not ever. Because I don't understand iTunes on my computer. I can't fix it. I mean, I just have this laundry list of problems that I can't get fixed. So, like, lately it's decided to start deleting podcasts. It's deleted most of my Mac podcasts. This week it decided to get rid of the MacCast. But earlier it's gotten rid of my own podcast. I'm pretty sure I didn't delete that one. It got rid of the Mac Roundtable. A whole bunch of other Mac podcasts have just vaporized. All of a sudden I'll be going, man, you know, why isn't so-and-so podcast in a long time? And it's because iTunes has deleted it. Another problem I have is I can't make playlists that sync to my iPod Nano. I can make playlists. I can tell it to take those playlists. I can tell it to sync those playlists. And then when I get down to my run, there's no playlist there at all. I can even make smart playlists. Steve said maybe that would work. I can make those, and I can tell it to sync them. And they don't. Hey, my Nano often turns 90 degrees all on its own. Just does it. I reach down to do it, and one day it'll just be 90 degrees. I mean, it's easy enough to fix, but why does it do that? I don't want it to do that. Sometimes it jumps to the beginning of podcasts randomly. Okay, look, I don't understand iTunes. I don't understand iPod, so don't ask me questions about it. All right, with that disclaimer in place, today we have a dumb question from Michael Werner. He wrote in, "Hi, Allison. I think this might qualify as a dumb question. What is domain name hosting? Will it help with the following problem? As a teacher, I publish my lessons online using a program called PlanBook from Jeff Hellman, which does all the HTML voodoo. Now, I'm currently posting to MobileMe, but bye-bye next June. So I've been looking at alternatives such as Dropbox and, as of today, Amazon S3. These both seem to work with hosting my lesson plan website, but both require a tricky URL for the kids to use. So is this where domain hosting comes in? Can you redirect, say, an Amazon S3 website to a domain name set up through hover.com, or is it the other way around? And should I stop pretending I'm a power user?" Well, Michael, I love this dumb question because I think I actually know the answer. Lately, all the questions haven't been dumb enough. That's another problem, too. Stop asking hard ones. I have to go get Bart or somebody else to help me with the answer. All right, let's start from scratch here. To have a website, you need two things: a domain name and a hosting service for the content. A domain name would be like podfeet.com or bartb.ie. That's the name you give humans that is registered to point at a specific web server or where you have the hosting for the actual content. So every website has an IP address that tells the inner tubes where to find it, But for humans to be able to easily access the site, you need a domain name. You buy domain names from domain name services, and you suggested like Hover or the very out of popularity GoDaddy and a whole host of others. But before you buy a domain name, you really do need a web hosting service, a place to put your content, a server that'll contain your web accessible files. Again, you can buy your web hosting services from companies like Hover and GoDaddy. There are a zillion companies who do this, and don't ask me which one's best. That's kind of like asking, what's the best color? Every hosting service out there has haters and lovers. Some have more haters than others, but there's definitely haters and lovers for all of them. I've heard good things about Hover lately, and many people I respect are advertising for them, so you might want to consider using them for your domain name hosting and your domain hosting. So, to create a site like podfeet.com, I rent space on a web host, and I rent the domain name. I pay a monthly or yearly fee for the web host and a yearly fee to keep the domain name. You with me so far? Now, to actually build the website, I use an open source, otherwise known as free, tool called WordPress to make the content look pretty. I won't go into exactly how to use it because I'm going to suggest a much easier way for you to go. Since you're a teacher, instead of renting a domain name, which is cheap, and renting a web host, which is still cheap, but you're probably talking $100 a year that, you know, a teacher might not want to spend. And why should you if you don't have to? There's a free option that will give you most of what you want. It's a commercial outfit called WordPress.com. So the WordPress.com people are using the free WordPress software, but they have built a service for normal people to be able to create websites without having to know all this stuff and being a power user. So you go to WordPress.com and you ask for a free account, and then you pick a name. Let's say you chose Michael Werner. They would give you a free domain called michaelwerner.wordpress.com. They would set up a free website for you on their hosting service and install WordPress for you. From there, you can pick a visual theme that makes you happy and get to work. If you change your mind later on the theme, you can even change it anytime you like. Now, WordPress is technically a blogging platform, but I can see this working really well for a teacher. Picture each blog post was a new assignment, or class notes for that week. You can also add what they call pages, which are static and change less often. So on a page, you could put your rules of behavior for the classroom, or your rules of when assignments are due and how much the grade drops for each day late, or maybe contact information for you, or links to the school website, that kind of thing. This is one of the easiest things to do, and if you have any trouble at all, I would be glad to lend a hand. I got where I am by other people pulling me up, so I feel like I really do have to pay it forward. Now, one caution, as a teacher, WordPress.com makes its money off of advertising, so you don't have control over their advertising. I haven't created a new account in ages, but I seem to remember they had some sort of filtering of ads, you know, things you wouldn't allow. But that memory could be flawed. It might have been a different service, so don't count on it. You can always upgrade later to a paid plan if the ads, you know, become intrusive and are a problem. I hope this answers your question of what's a domain name and maybe gives you more info on how to move forward on this really cool project. Before I forget, remember that Clarify's sale ends in the Mac App Store on Monday the 24th, so I sure hope you're either listening to this late on Sunday night or you already bought it. I've heard from a whole host of people that they grabbed it on sale, and most of these people already own ScreenSteps, which is pretty interesting. Even when it does come off sale, it's still a great deal. It's only $30 for a Mac or Windows license, or you can pay $40 for a cross-platform version. If you want the Mac-only version, do get it on the Mac App Store, because it's licensed for all the Macs in your house that way. I don't know what it is, up to five, something like that? I forget. But wait, what's Clarify do? It allows you to clarify communications with coworkers, friends, family, and developers. So let me work with an example here. Let's say you find a bug in some software or a part of the application that confuses you. You hit Command-Shift-3 and you start snapping screenshots in Clarify. When you're done taking those screenshots, throw some quick annotations on them, you know, like blurring out your credit card number or home address, putting in a few sequence numbers on it to show the order you filled out, and then just pop it up onto the web. Free, of course, and you get a link to send to the developer. For example, just this week, I was working with the lovely Nora from Brewgy.com about a unique problem I was having with DVDpedia. I used Clarify to explain the problem, and she wrote back, "Excellent screenshots and captions!" She could totally see what the problem was and is attacking it now. Head on over to the Mac App Store and get Clarify. If you use the link I put in the show notes, it's an affiliate link, so I get double credit for it, too.
Hi, Allison and fellow Nacilla Castaways. This is Rod Simmons from Simple Mobile Review. This week, I'm going to introduce you to a product that solves a problem that you probably didn't really even know you had, and I found that the best solutions solve problems that aren't necessarily obvious to you, but they annoy the heck out of you every time you have to do them. So what's the product? It's called APP Dialer, or APPT Dialer, to be more accurate. It's an appointment dialer for iOS. So what does it do is probably what you're wondering. Now, the biggest problem I've ever had with iOS is that when someone schedules a meeting, especially for like a conference call, there's usually a conference dial-in number, and then there's a passcode. And usually you want to automate the dialing. Now, most people put, you know, the conference number, EXT, and then, or X, and then the number on it, and that works perfect on like a BlackBerry to dial in. But for some reason, the iPhone doesn't recognize the X as an extension to let you dial it. So you're forced to dial the number, then toggle back over to find what the meeting code is, and then manually enter that into the meeting. And the longer the meeting code is, the harder it is to remember, you know, 8 or 9 digits. So you're constantly toggling back and forth, entering a couple digits at a time. You get the problem. You probably actually had it. So what Appointment Dialer does is it solves that problem. It reads through your calendars, and when you launch the app, you see your up-and-coming appointments in chronological order. So you can select any given appointment, and then you'll see the number to dial on one side of the screen with a scroller, and on the other side, you'll see all the other numbers it recognizes. For example, the passcode to enter your meeting. Once you say, yes, that is the number, that's the passcode, you can just hit select, and then it'll toggle you over to another screen with a dialer, where it'll dial the number, it'll put 2 commas in between, you can increase the number of commas if needed via settings, and then it'll have your passcode. If there are certain numbers you dial that need additional prefixes, for example, dial 1 to enter the passcode, you can enter those prefixes tied to an individual number if there's a number you always call or highly frequently call. Most important, once you press this, it actually launches the dialer app, and it can actually dial the number, and it can also dial the passcode. And in the newest release, which is only available in iOS 5, it can actually dial star or pound after your numbers. So, for example, please enter the passcode followed by the pound sign. It'll actually dial the pound for you now. In the prior version, you had to actually enter the pound yourself because that wasn't supported in iOS 4 prior to iOS 5 is the easiest way to say it. This has been an absolute gem of an app. Every person I recommend it to, the first thing they say is, $3.99 for an app, are you crazy? But then after they've used it for a couple weeks, they start to realize, man, it's so much easier to dial appointments on the iPhone. And that one burden that you've always had to deal with being an iOS user was joining conference calls from your phone. You no longer have to grab a piece of paper and write down the dial-in number. Appointment Dialer will do it all for you. Like I said, it's $4.99 in the App Store. It's probably one of my more favorite apps to actually use on an iOS device. And now that I ordered the iPhone 4S, yes, I am such a sucker for new devices. I'll be using the iPhone as my primary device when it comes in. So my wife is clueless that she has an iPhone 4S. I swapped her iPhone 4 for the 4S. She still doesn't know. It's been like a week now. And I'm getting the iPhone 4S. But Appointment Dialer will be one of those apps that's front and center for me to be able to dial into the numerous conference calls I have to sit on. Hopefully, any other people who use an iPhone in the business will actually enjoy this app and get into conference calls easier.
Hey, Rod, this is pretty cool. I only recently figured out how to set my iPhone to do the dialing for me, and that's when it's on my own call-in number, so I already know way ahead of time what all the codes are and stuff. This is pretty cool to be able to do it for all of them. You know, it's kind of funny how our threshold of pain is some number under $3. If you'd said $1.99, we'd be all like, cool, no problem, I'll go buy that. But $3, you go, whoa, too rich for my blood. That's pretty steep. Well, anyway, thanks for the great tip, Rod. That's a pretty cool program. As always, thank you for the great review. For some reason, Steve and I both had the same nostalgic thought about technology this last weekend. I'm not sure why we both thought about this particular topic at the same time, but we were both thinking about a technology we used to use years and years ago called CUCME. CUCME was developed by Cornell University, hence the spelling, it's capital C-U, and it was the earliest computer-based video conferencing tool we had ever used. Our buddy Ron convinced us to download it and install the software on our Mac and to get a webcam. This was around 1992, 3 years before it was ever ported to Windows. I remember distinctly how hard it was to connect to each other. we'd go into what were called reflector sites where you could talk to random people on video. Those were simpler, cleaner times. No chat roulette going on. Well, maybe a little. Anyway, we'd be on the phone to Ron, fiddling with endless settings, trying to get the audio and video working properly. After maybe an hour of fiddling, suddenly this little tiny grayscale image would come into focus. It was maybe like 2 to 3 frames per second. It was really fuzzy. The video size was, you know, maybe an inch on a side. But it was Ron looking right at us, and he was an entire mile and a half away. I remember thinking that this was certainly a crappy experience, but I got chills because I could tell I was seeing the future. I knew this was just the beginning and that one day this kind of video chat would be simple and easy to do and maybe even commonplace. Nowadays, I don't think much of popping open a video Skype window to chat with Dorothy while she and I discuss the script she's writing for me, or let's say I'm interviewing Steve Stanger from New York or Alistair Jenks from New Zealand for a chit-chat across the pond episode, and we say, hey, let's do video. Or maybe my pusher Mark Dalton and I get on Skype video so he can explain things to me even better. It's not as pervasive as I'd like because some areas, notably Ireland, don't have the bandwidth to hold a good video chat, but I'm still talking to people all over the country and all over the world on video. And it's really, really good video. My friend Diane went back to New York and actually talked her stepmother and father into buying 2 new iPhones and a brand new iMac, and she set them up with iChat, and I was able to see her mom. I hadn't seen her mom in, I don't know, 10 years, and I was able to sit and chat with her, and the video quality was spectacular. It was such a cool thing. You know, it's taken nearly 20 years to go from that postage stamp size, grayscale, 3 frames per second image on CUCME to get to high-def video across the globe, but we're really there now, and I think it's simply amazing. Well, it's time to hear yet again from good friend of the show, George from Tulsa.
How long ago was Allison's 89th show? So long ago, it ran only 38 minutes. So long ago, the iPhone wasn't on the market. So long ago, the problem to be solved in listener Maurice's review of XMenu was bringing OS 9's ability to modify the Apple menu into OS 10. OS 9? So many OS versions later, does anyone even remember that OS 9's Apple menu could be modified? I sure don't. All these years later, is the XMenu program Maurice found useful in April 2007 still relevant? Want one-click access to applications, files, folders, even URLs? XMenu. Papered your desktop with alias links to applications, folders, files? XMenu. Frustrated by Stacks and Lion's Launchpad? XMenu. Overstuffed your dock so it gets in the way? XMenu. Lose things? XMenu's Snippets is a persistent clipboard that survives reboot. Poor man's text expander, no setup required. Drop whatever URL, image, text in XMenu Snippets folder and store it a menu bar click away. XMenu setup is easy, but better explained in a screen steps walkthrough than a necessarily brief audio clip. Investing modest time learning XMenu should yield substantial productivity gains. XMenu is universal, works on all Macs running 10.5 or later. XMenu is freeware provided by Devon Technologies. As always, check Allison's show notes for my screen steps intro to XMenu, as well as related links.
Well, George, I sure do remember the show being 38 minutes long. You know, Steve used to like me to keep it to 40 minutes, so it was the length of time of our run. But we'd have to run about 12 miles to go for the length of the show now. I also do remember the cool way you could pull down on the Apple menu to see all your programs. I remember loving that. But those were simpler times, weren't they, George? I installed the X menu and clicked on the application icon in the menu bar, and on my 27-inch Apple Cinema display, which is 1,440 pixels tall, the application menu only gets down to the letter I before it runs out of space. I'll have to goof around with the other features you've described there, too. It sure looks like a fun application. I'm definitely going to go check it out. You know, I just realized, looking at the things I have on the agenda here, and this show isn't going to be very long at all. In fact, it might only be about 45 minutes. So, well, maybe you brought it on, George. Well, for some reason, three of you out there are still not using Text Expander. Now, I rack my brains trying to figure out why you wouldn't want a tool that reduces repetitive stress from typing. Maybe you're too young to realize that repetitive stress injuries will happen to you someday. Maybe you just need more examples. With over 200,000 characters saved so far this year through the use of Text Expander from Smile, I can give you some really good examples. How about trying to spell Bart Bouchot? Do you think I can actually spell that? Really? Oh, I can't tell you how many emails and tweets he's never received from me because I don't spell it right. Trying to remember which letters are doubled and not doubled, it's just impossible. Nobody can spell it. I don't think his mom can probably spell it. So I simply type comma BB and out squirts Bart Bouchot's. Not a problem. How about typing out Nocilla Castaways? It's not hard to spell, but it's an awful lot of characters and there's an annoying capital C in the middle. Whose idea was that anyway? I type NCS semicolon and out pops Nocilla Castaways. Do you guys listen to Steve Stanger's fantastic new podcast, I See, I Shoot, iPhone? You don't really think I'm going to type all that out, do you? I mean, it's lowercase I, capital S, lowercase I, capital S, lowercase I, capital P. I mean, for crying out loud, it's going to drive me crazy by the time I get to the end. But I don't do that. I type ISIP semicolon and boom, it comes right out. Some words are super easy and not all that long, but I type them so often it's worth having a Text Expander snippet. Facebook is FB semicolon, Dropbox, DB semicolon, Final Cut Pro X is simply FCP. I talk about Wirecast pretty often, so it's just WC semicolon. I'm sure there's words you write all the time for which you could use Text Expander to save you time and stress on those risks. Put it on your holiday gift list right now. It's only $34.95 from smilesoftware.com. Kevin Alder, also known as Big in Virginia in the live chat room, probably one of the most fanatical Nocilla castaways, has sent in a little written commentary that I thought was pretty interesting. Here's what he wrote. Dear Allison, on my way into work this morning, I was listening to show number 334. My apologies to my wingman and the Nocilla castaways for missing the live show. Little commentary here. He did send in a written excuse, so it was an allowable absence. Anyway, back to Kevin. He says, as I listened to the description of yours and Kyle's adventures with iOS 5, you mentioned the fact that you could now set up a custom vibration notification within iOS. It was attributed to the care and attention Apple pays to the needs of hearing-impaired users, which we all know, of course, is true and wonderful of them to do. Knowing yours and most, if not all, of your listeners' passion for pointing out these handy features, I thought I'd tell you about one you didn't talk about. That is the ability to enable LED notifications under iOS 5. I read about this on one of my favorite blogs, Lifehacker, over at lifehacker.com. The author, Adam Pash, wrote a nice little summary about this, of which I've included in the following snippet. Under Enable LED Notifications, it says, a lot of phones allow you to flash an LED for a more visual alert. To enable LED notifications in iOS 5, you have to dig down into the Accessibility menu in Settings, General, Accessibility, and then Enable LED Flash for Alerts. There's a pretty big catch to this one, though. It only works when your phone is in silent mode, that is, vibration turned off, its setting, sounds, and the Vibrate Silence hardware switch toggled on. You should also keep in mind that it's not a persistent flash, as far as I can tell. It emanates one showy series of flashes and then goes away. Back to Kevin. He says, now, while this is very cool, as Adam mentions, it's not perfect. But hey, what is? He also mentions other features, which you covered, and provides a link to a more detailed article on Wired Magazine's website, which I've included below, as well as a link to Adam's post on Lifehacker. I hope you find this interesting and useful. Until next week, your friend and Nocilla castaway, Kevin. Well, thanks for sending that in, Kevin. That's pretty cool. I also want to mention that something very interesting has happened. Last week, I talked about the fact that you couldn't do text tones different by person. Alistair Jenks from New Zealand and Paul from Peru both wrote to me and said, yeah, you could totally do that in iOS 4, but I would bet you big money you couldn't do that before, because people who care deeply about it, my son Kyle and his friend Cody, tried really hard to find it, and I looked into it and couldn't find it. So I'm wondering whether that was something special by carriers, because I don't think that this was true in the United States, and both of these guys are from other countries, from New Zealand and Peru. So if I'm wrong, it would be pretty interesting to know. I would like to know whether it actually was available in the United States in iOS 4. So one more note on accessibility. I've been having some interesting discussions with a gentleman named Patrick Hennebry, and he's been educating me on mobility accessibility. He called me on the carpet for referring to accessibility in a generic sense, but actually only referring to blind accessibility. I thought it was a really good point, so I said, hey, educate me. What are the problems? What are the solutions? You know, what can't you do? What can you do? What tools are good? What tools are lame? And he started to give me some good education on that. So I asked him to give me some more information, and he wrote a really, really long explanation of very specifically how Windows 8 with the Metro UI, those big tiles, by its very design, will not allow mobility accessibility, specifically allowing you to launch applications through voice control and then actually manage them within that with voice control going to the text fields and telling the application what to do. I don't completely understand why, but I do know that in he's saying that in the Metro UI, it's not at all possible. So I thought this might be fun to push forward. So I sent it to Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott of Windows Weekly, the show hosted by Leo Laporte, and I got both of their attention. They're both really, really well-placed with Microsoft. They don't work for Microsoft, but they know the players pretty well. Mary Jo wrote back and said that Microsoft has been completely silent about anything that's going on in Windows 8 development, and she wasn't sure she could help, but perhaps Paul could. And then Paul wrote back and he said he sent this letter from Patrick on to Stephen Sanofsky. Stephen Sanofsky is the head of the Windows division at Microsoft. I mean, talk about getting a pipeline to the top if you can't get to anybody better than that, I think. So hopefully this will make an effect and we can get some changes in place. You know, I don't know how this stuff works with Microsoft, but it was pretty cool to be able to help maybe connect some dots and hopefully get some real changes in Windows 8. Well, I've mentioned on the show a few times before that Don McAllister and I will be speaking on Mac Mania 15 in November 2012 to Australia. So I've asked Neil Bowman, a CEO of Insight Cruises, to join us to tell us a little bit more about Mac Mania Cruises. How are you doing today, Neil?
Allison, I'm great, thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm really glad we got a chance to pull this off. I know you've been rather busy because you do a lot of these cruises, right?
You know, I do. I was just on this ridiculously fabulous three-week trip, the Black Sea, which I've yet to take the Mac Group to, but clearly need to.
Oh.
We were in a couple of former Soviet bloc countries, Bulgaria, Ukraine, and we were in Russia.
Wow.
And these are really fascinating places, not really for the reasons you would think. Because it's still really sort of depressed. I mean, it's halfway between Europe and Mexico.
Oh.
Russia. Yeah, some of it. Some of it's not. Yalta is pretty modern. But Varna, Bulgaria, I mean, it's really pretty sad.
Well, before we get too far into that, maybe you could explain what Insight Cruises is and how Mac Mania fits into Insight Cruises. How does this work?
Well, Mac Mania is an Insight cruise that we've been doing since 2001, if I'm not mistaken, so a long time. Matter of fact, of all of our existing cruises, it's still the longest running set of cruises. Insight Cruises is a combination, amalgamation of a tour company or a travel company, or really a cruise company, since most of our touring and traveling is cruising, and an educational company. But basically, we like to think of ourselves as an educational company with a lot of fun. So we offer our educational products primarily on cruise ships. The Mac Mania heretofore has been nothing but a cruise-based conference. It's sort of like a little mini Mac World without the exhibits. mostly, but not completely, on a cruise ship.
Okay. And then what are the other kinds of cruises that you do?
We have done a vast array of them, from Shakespeare and chess to quilting, but primarily today we're focusing on three markets. Most of what we're doing is the Mac cruise. We do a few cruises a year for Scientific American magazine, and starting in less than a year, we'll be doing cruises for the New York Times.
Wow.
Travel program.
So when you go on one of these cruises, the cruise ship has, I don't know, 38,000 people on it or something. I forget the number, but how many people will be traveling for MacMania versus the rest of the cruise?
MacMania component is pretty small, generally speaking. The cruise ships vary in size. Some of them are gigantic. Some of them do hold 6,000 passengers now. We don't go into ships that are that large. The average cruise ship that we go on is probably 1,600 passengers.
Oh, okay.
Relatively small in cruising standards. And indeed, the one I was on just last week was 1,500 passengers. And many of the passengers said to me from our group, you hardly even notice the other passengers. You can't tell that they're 1,500 people because the ship is big.
So when we were chatting earlier, you said something like 100 or so people would be on a MacMania cruise with respect to the rest of the ship?
That's correct. I mean, it's been varying quite a bit. For the cruise we did about a month ago, which was from Vancouver down to San Diego, I think we had about 50 people.
Okay. And so pretty intimate then.
Yeah, that is. And the one we had prior to that was a bigger crowd, and that was South America. It was from Buenos Aires to Santiago, and that was about 125, 150 people.
Okay, but still, if someone goes on the cruise, then they have some pretty intimate access to the speakers, like Leo Laporte's going to be on MacMania 12?
Mm-hmm. Indeed he is. Yeah, he's a really affable, outgoing, fun, loving guy.
He just loves people.
He does. He absolutely does. Well, and obviously he's in a job that just suits him perfectly.
Talk about getting to do what you love. So yep. So let's talk about how this works. So when I first heard about this, I thought, well, you know, here's this great cruise to Australia. You're going to go through the Great Barrier Reef. You're going to go over to what's the island?
The New Caledonia.
New Caledonia. Oh, okay. New Caledonia, that whole area, you know, this is going to be amazing. But you're stuck in a classroom all day. Do you miss the cruise?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I don't think so. I mean, generally speaking, when you're sailing between these islands, there's not that much to see.
Oh, right, right.
Right? It's just the sea. You know, there's just water out there. I mean, sometimes you see occasional animals, but not too often. And it looks pretty much the same. I mean, you could be cruising in the Caribbean, or you could be cruising just between Korea and China. And it looks pretty much the same.
And I'm not big on shuffleboard and that sort of thing. And you can't drink all day. So right, being in class seems like a good idea.
Most people are not particularly into shuffleboard. I mean, most people go on cruises that are not doing events on cruises to just chill out, to just relax between the hopefully fascinating ports of call. I mean, that is why they're there. Although some people, more than others, really love sea time. I'm one of those. I mean, if I'm on a transatlantic going from the UK to Florida or either way, I mean, just 5 sea days, to me, that's heaven. It's just quiet. It's peaceful. For whatever reason, whenever you're, you know, staring out at the ocean, your earthbound problems just seem to wash away, as it were, with the tide.
I don't know if I could do that, Neil. I thrive on the anxiety and excitement of I mean, I live in the city and just.
No, you would think that way, but I'm telling you, and this is why cruising is addicting. When you go on the ship, I mean, you can have as much of your anxiety as you'd like. Try to, and you can try to, you know, have as much interaction with the outside world as you'd like, but you do have a hard time because communication is limited. There is internet. But it is slow. So you're not going to be using it. And it's expensive. So you're not going to use it to surf the web.
Yeah, the expensive part will keep me from using it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the least expensive you're going to get is 20, 25 cents a minute.
Wow.
And it's slow. It's like a fast dial-up.
Jeez.
Who remembers that even? Well, you remember it very quickly once you start using it. In any event, so you end up not communicating much with the outside world. And your cell phones work. Believe it or not, if someone calls your cell phone, it'll ring.
It'll just cost you $300 to answer the phone, right?
Well, not so bad, but not so cheap. It's about $2 a minute.
Wow.
Yeah, so a 10-minute phone conversation is $20. I mean, so you don't want to chit-chat with anybody.
Yeah. I don't like the phone that much anyway nowadays. I like the internets, though. That's going to be the hard part.
You'll be able to use it as much as you want, Allison. You're just not going to be able to surf with comfort and ease. And
reckless freedom. Abandon.
That's correct.
Now, when I was talking to Don about the cruise, he made a comment that I thought was really, really funny, and he wasn't trying to be funny. He said one of the things that was really cool on the last one he was on was that the MacMania people had their own dining area so they could all hang out together. And my immediate reaction to that was, I bet they did that on purpose to keep all the nerd balls away from the normal people.
I think we're probably, of course, you haven't cruised, obviously. I think we're maybe one of the more saner groups on these ships.
Oh, dear. No, I actually have not. I've taken a 3-day cruise to Mexico, and I don't think that counts.
No, it really doesn't. we are a little oddballish, but we generally, the dining room is on a couple of levels, and they serve two seating. So you really sort of, let's say you've got a ship of 1,500 passengers. So you've got 375 people that could sit on a level during a seating time. So, and that's a big area, but not a massive area. Now, so our group is maybe 100 people, right? So we're maybe 25% of that floor space.
Okay.
So we'll do dinner from 7:30 or 8, second seating, whenever it begins, till about 9:30. And we'll sit in a corner. We'll sit in an area. And the reason we sit in an area is so that we can easily shuffle among us. After the first night, when pretty much I have everyone sit in their assigned seats so they can just see our area, and so that the wait staff and the restaurant can seat people easily. But after that, everyone knows where we're sitting, and then I let the tables be open. You can sit anywhere in our area.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
You get to get to meet people and know people, and hopefully by the end of the cruise, you've spoken to just about everybody.
Yeah, it sounds like a place to make some good nerd friends. I'm looking forward to that part. So what's it like for traveling companions if you've got a non-nerdish spouse or something that wouldn't want to go to the MacMania part? What's the experience like for them?
Well, that's an excellent question. First of all, 25% of the spouses do not attend. That is, if you are going, there's a 75% chance that your spouse or partner will go on the event as well.
Okay.
So you're talking about a relatively small number of people in the group. But because you're doing dinners together, and then after a while you're doing short excursions together, you get to know each other, so you're hanging out with each other.
Okay, so the spouses get to have dinner with you and go on all the excursions and everything together with you?
That's right. And all of our parties are open to everyone in the group.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's cool. In my case, my husband is an Uber nerd, so we wouldn't have that. But I'm thinking about people who are trying to convince their spouse or a significant other of some sort to come on this trip. What would they be able to tell them? So that sounds fun.
You should interview Don and his spouse. I mean, you know, Barbara.
Oh, that's right, because Barbara doesn't like the super geeky stuff.
She probably doesn't dislike it, but, you know, she definitely does not go to many of the classes. I don't know that I've ever seen her go to any class. But she obviously relishes going to these cruises, otherwise they wouldn't be doing them.
All right. Oh, I'm going to make her go to mine. There's no question about that. At least one.
I would. I would force her to do that. Yes. She got you on this into this mess.
Yeah, so exactly. I got a little nervous about the audience when Don told me I'm one of his, he had Wozniak sitting in the front row. Am I walking into something where everybody in the room is smarter than me?
Maybe.
Oh, great, great. Make me not sleep at night.
But they're not going to be more knowledgeable than you, right? You do this for a living, right? This is your job. And you're using the Mac professionally all the time.
Right, right.
Other people, the people that are sitting in there are using it maybe professionally all the time, but they're not trying to get the maximum out of their machine. That's not their job. That's not their goal.
Right? Okay, it's a tool.
Right, it's a tool. So you're going to know basically more than everybody. Not about necessarily every single menu item and every single pull down, Because there are definitely going to be times when people say, Allison, I think that's wrong. Or, Allison, this might be a better way. You're going to definitely get that.
I think Don said that was part of what he liked, was that when he was teaching, he was learning, too, because the audience, it's fairly interactive, I understand.
It is pretty interactive, and because it's generally small, so I mean, you've got the, you know, group of 100, so maybe you've got 60, 75 conference attendees. So this is not like Macworld, where you've got 500 or 1,000 people sitting in here, and everyone, after a day or two or three, gets to know each other pretty well, all right? The speakers are having dinner with the attendees, too. So it's more of, even though it's a lecture-oriented, lecture delivery process, it's really more of an open forum, and people are chit-chatting, and to some degree, the more you go off script, the more the attendees are enjoying it, as well as the speaker.
Right.
And the whole point is to learn and have fun at the same time.
So I should set up a structure to my talks, but don't be heartbroken if it wanders off a bit.
I would say not only that, don't be heartbroken, I would even allow time in your talk to not be perfectly scripted, to not have slides. That is, plan on speaking for, let's say you've got a 90-minute talk, for 75 minutes, giving yourself 15 minutes for Q&A. But of the 75 minutes you plan on talking, I would only have slides for 60 minutes. I would plan on just ad-libbing for 15.
Yeah, you know, I'm a fan of the ad-lib, and the slides are hard for me, so this is going to be a challenge. I'm used to doing live demos of most things, so that'll be a challenge, but
well,
I think I'm up for it.
So what you're going to get, Allison, is you're going to be giving a live demo, and then someone's going to ask a relevant, interesting question that requires stopping the demo and showing something else.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't require internet access.
Some of it does, and sometimes the speakers are on the internet when they're using it, and David Pogue has done that from time to time, and it's slow. Depends on when you use it. If you want to get up really early, if your class is starting at 8:30, internet at 8:30 is pretty good on the ship.
Oh, okay.
Be very bad between 1:30 and 5.
Because everybody's trying to use it, right?
Pretty much, you know, people are sort of lazy in the morning and they get up and breakfast goes till 10:30 or so, and then lunch starts at 11. So, you know, it's just most of the ship's people will be not, I mean, they're not really, they're there to vacation, right? So they don't really want to use the internet.
That's true. Right. Hey,
they're
so
generally using the internet at 1:30 because they're bored to tears. They're not in their classes.
So how early should somebody sign up? So MacMania 15 is in November of 2012. Mm-hmm. How soon should people be thinking about signing up for this?
Well, that's a good question. And the answer is you want to sign up a day before the ship sells out. Because after the ship, I don't have control of the ship. Again, we're just a small group. We're maybe 5, maybe 10% of the ship. So the ship is itself, the cruise line itself and other travel agencies are selling space on that ship, and I have no control over that.
But if 200 people wanted to sign up for MacMania because of this incredible coverage you're getting right this moment, could that happen?
As long as it's before
the ship fills up.
Yeah, a couple of months from now, probably not. I mean, because it's an eclipse cruise, and 90% of the people on this ship are going to be there just to see the eclipse and nothing but the eclipse.
Oh, we haven't even told them about that. Tell them about that.
Well,
there's an eclipse.
An eclipse is when the moon comes between the Earth and the sun. Right? And depending on how close or far the moon is from the Earth, believe it or not, the moon does not have a fixed orbit around the Earth. There's either a ring around the sun, and you can see the outer ring of the sun, or it's totally covered when the moon is closer to the Earth, and then you get a total solar eclipse, and that's what's going to happen here. They're not that common, particularly in places where you can see them. This you can see on land in Australia. Obviously, it's better to see it out at ocean because if there are clouds, you can move the ship.
Oh, so that's funny.
Yeah, so that's the ideal. And, of course, you don't have any disturbances from birds or from trees or from anything else that might block you, from planes, anything like that. So this, because it's a solar eclipse, there are going to be tons of people all over the world that are going to Australia to see this. These things are what they call ephemera. These things are highly sought after for reasons that actually escape me, these are, talk about nerds, these are really bizarre nerd people that that really just chase eclipses all over the planet. However, I mean, from what I understand, I've never been in a total solar eclipse. It's a truly awesome experience. We're not going to be able to experience the birds going quiet, but apparently the birds go quiet. And there's this darkness that oversets the land. It's sort of like something out of a science fiction movie, I guess.
Spooky.
Yeah, it is sort of spooky, and apparently it's an awesome feeling. And so people do what they can to go in these things. So I have a group on the ship already with Sky and Telescope Magazine, one of my other partners.
Oh, okay.
And we have some speakers that are going to be doing nothing but talking about the eclipse. And since we were already there, and since I've had tons of requests from my Mac group to go to Australia, I decided, well, what the heck, we'll open it up to them too. And they get the benefit, of course, of, you know, seeing this fabulous event.
Oh, well, that's gonna be awesome. My husband is quite into astronomy and that sort of thing, so Steve will get a big kick out of that too. I think I've seen a partial eclipse up in Nova Scotia when I was a kid, but that's about as far as I go.
Yeah, I saw one too in about 1972 or 73. A partial eclipse affected the whole northeast of the United States.
That's actually when it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little kid. We were sailing up into Canada.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There you go. And you could see it did change. It got a little darker, as I recall. I don't know what it was like up in Nova Scotia, down where I was in New Jersey. It was about three quarters total, and it definitely was interesting. But it didn't have. It didn't blow me away. I was not, you know, so motivated that I would spend all of my spare money and spare time, you know, chasing all over the planet. But, you know, those that do it, they get a real charge out of it, without a doubt.
That sounds really cool. So let's talk a little bit about not cruel, cool. Let's talk about the cost of this a little bit, because doing a cruise like this is not an inexpensive adventure to start with. But the cost of the conference doesn't add that much, considering how much training you're getting, right?
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, but it includes some cocktail parties, and it includes. You know, access to the speakers that you're not getting in Macworld, but it's obviously a lot of classes. I think we're going to have at least 20 classes. I think we're going to have at least 30 hours of classes.
Hmm. Wow.
So, you know, I think we're looking at, you know, like something like $30-$35 an hour for this sort of thing, and so I would call that a steal.
Yeah, yeah. Especially because it's, like you say, it's an intimate setting. You're not one of, you know, 200 people or 300 people in a room, that sort of thing, like you would be at Macworld.
Just answered. I mean, you know, you have, if you have an interest in exploring something more deeply, you're going to get a chance to do that. Macworld and, you know, other venues, it's harder to do.
Right.
And if you buy training somewhere, you know, I recently took an InDesign class for 2 days. That, I think, was like $1,200 or $1,500.
Wow.
It was not cheap. And, you know, you sort of 2 days, boom, boom, and, you know, you're driving into L.A. and parking where, and you're having lunch, it's just pathetic. And,
you know, one other thing I find is that when things are spread out over a longer period, I tend to learn more. So, like, you pretty much absorb one to two things a day. And if you take just a, you know, solid 2 days of classes, you only learn maybe four things on the outside. But if you take all of these classes, like you said, these 30 hours of training over the course of a full 2 week cruise, you're going to retain a lot more information, I think.
Well, that's an interesting point, although that may say something about your IQ, too.
Hey, come on.
I'm sorry.
You're supposed to be nice to me. Wait, I'm the hired help, aren't I?
I do think you're right. I mean, there's a limit to how much your brain can absorb in a day. And when you're doing something over and over, you're playing with your Mac over and over, and someone is giving you a pointer, and then you use it, and you can go back 2 days later and say, you know, I found this, or what exactly did you do here?
Yeah.
Without a doubt, that is helping. So that probably is an unbeknownst benefit to me that I hadn't marketed and mentioned heretofore, and I will going forward. So thanks for that tip. But, of course, you stretch it out over this period of time, and it's just more fun. I mean, you're just getting the benefit. I mean, as much as I criticized that InDesign class, it was fun. I mean, it's nice to sit in the classroom. But it was 2 days. Boom, there was my $1,200 bucks, and it was gone.
Right. There's no interaction with the people after the fact to find out what else they could do or how that exactly worked, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just exactly. It's a very short-lived experience. This is clearly a vacation that you're going to remember for the rest of your life. And you're going to have tons of photos that you're going to look at for the rest of your life. And you're going to be going to places that you wouldn't probably ever go to.
Definitely. We have always wanted to go to Australia, and just this has finally given us the push over the edge to do it, Neil.
Exactly. I think that's the case with a lot of the places where I go. You know, people would always wanted to go to the Black Sea, for instance, and see Russia and these places. But, what an effort to get there. You've got to be so motivated. Or it's a confluence of so many delightful things. Oh, it's a cruise, and oh, it's classes, and oh, it's a community. And oh, it's in St. Cruises. What a high-quality, fabulous organization that is. So you pull all these things together, and then you pass the tipping point. You just do it.
All right, cool. I'm getting more and more excited. I don't know if I'm going to be able to wait a year for this, but is there anything else you'd like to tell everybody about?
There's a Mark Twain quote that comes to my mind that I don't say enough, because people think that traveling is to see, particularly those that don't travel a lot. I'm going to see all these new places. And, well, that's true. Mark Twain said it so well. I don't travel to see new things, new places. I travel to see things with new eyes. Traveling opens you up, and particularly when you're going on an insight cruise, where it's all about thinking and learning and communicating in a community. You come back from this thing a much richer person, in my mind, and more so than just the experience of having been to Australia, or having taken these classes, or having hung out with Leo. It's all of these things. And you're going to come back thinking about things and seeing things with new eyes.
Wow. I was just looking forward to seeing Donna Barbara.
You'll get that too, I promise.
All right, well, I am going to cut you off now. And so if somebody wants to sign up for Insight Cruises or to learn about the Mac Media Cruise in particular and figure out how to book it, where should they go?
InsightCruises.com.
Okay, good. All right, Neil, I really appreciate you spending the time with us. And one last question. My husband, Steve, wanted me to ask you, do you wear a captain's hat during the show, during the cruise?
I would if I had the right size. Ooh. If someone could find me one that fits my big head, I will do it.
what's your hat size?
I don't know.
Big?
Just extra large, yeah. If you want, I'll put on a baseball cap and size it to me and ship it to you. See.
There you go. All right, Neil, I really appreciate you taking the time off to in between cruises to tell us about it, and I can't wait to meet you in real life.
Vice versa. Thanks a lot, Allison. All right, take it easy.
Well, I had a lot of fun with Captain Neil there. I told him ahead of time that it was okay if he gave me a hard time, and it looks like he rose to the challenge there a few times. I had a lot of fun talking to him. I was disappointed after we got off the air to find out he will not be on MacMania 15, so we won't get a chance to meet in real life. But I guess we'll have to meet virtually like we did over the weekend. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping to pay the bills. Be sure to head on over to BlueMangoLearning.com, check out Screen Steps and Clarify, and go on over to SmileSoftware.com and pick up one of the Smile products, or all of them if you want to. You know, you've got PDF Pen, and you got Text Expander, Disk Label. I mean, there's something over there for everybody, so do go check it out. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at Allison@podfeet.com. And remember, no iTunes, iPod, iPhone questions, okay? None, not a zip. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. I also contribute a lot over on Google+, so just search for me by name and circle me up. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, and in fact, we had a couple of new people to the live show. We had Elysian and Todd McCann both came to the live show this week, and they became official Nocilla castaways. You know, there's a whole hazing thing that goes on, but it's actually a lot of fun. It's family friendly. We say hi to the Emilys every single week, and it's just a really fun, warm group of people to hang out with. On some occasions, they actually listen to what I'm saying, but mostly they don't. If you do want to do that, head head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Join in the fun and be a No Silla Castaway. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.